Chapter 30. Light dawned upon his dusky soul, as he thought, through a speech of Mrs. Boots. "Mark my words, Rawdon," she said. "Who will have Miss Sharp one day for your relation?"
"What relation, my cousin, hey, Mrs. Boot?
James sweet on her, hey?" inquired the waggish officer. "More than that," Mrs. Boot said, with a flash from her black eyes.
"Not Pitt?
He shan't have her. The sneak ain't worthy of her. He's booked to Lady Jane Sheepshanks.
You men perceive nothing. You silly, blind creature, if anything happens to Lady Crawley, Miss Sharp will be your mother-in-law, and that's what will happen."
Rawdon Crawley Esquire gave vent to a prodigious whistle in token of astonishment at this announcement. He couldn't deny it. His father's evident liking for Miss Sharp had not escaped him. He knew the old gentleman's character well, and a more unscrupulous old wahoo he did not conclude the sentence, but walked home, curling his mustachios, and convinced he had found a clue to Mrs. Butte's mystery. "By Jove, it's too bad," thought Rawdon, "too bad, by Jove. I do believe the woman wants the poor girl to be ruined, in order that she shouldn't come into the family as Lady Crawley." When he saw Rebecca alone, he rallied her about his father's attachment in his graceful way. She flung up her head scornfully, looked him full in the face, and said, "Well, suppose he is fond of me. I know he is, and others too. You don't think I am afraid of him, Captain Crawley? You don't suppose I can't defend my own honor," said the little woman, looking as stately as a queen.
"Why, give you fair warning, look out, you know that's all," said the mustachioed twiddler.
"You hint at something not honorable, then?" said she, flashing out.
"Oh gad, really, Miss Rebecca," the heavy dragoon interposed.
"Do you suppose I have no feeling of self-respect, because I am poor and friendless, and because rich people have none? Do you think, because I am a governess, I have not as much sense, and feeling, and good breeding as you gentle folks in Hampshire? I'm a Montmorency. Do you suppose a Montmorency is not as good as a Crawley?" When Miss Sharp was agitated, and alluded to her maternal relatives, she spoke with ever so slight a foreign accent, which gave a great charm to her clear ringing voice.
"Oh," she continued, kindling as she spoke to the captain, "I can endure poverty, but not shame, neglect, but not insult, and insult from you."
Her feelings gave way, and she burst into tears.
"Hang it, Miss Sharp, Rebecca, by Jove, upon my soul, I wouldn't for £1,000.
Stop, Rebecca." She was gone. She drove out with Miss Crawley that day. It was before the latter's illness. At dinner she was unusually brilliant and lively, but she would take no notice of the hints, or the nods, or the clumsy expostulations of the humiliated, infatuated guardsman. Skirmishes of this sort passed perpetually during the little campaign, tedious to relate, and similar in result. The Crawley heavy cavalry was maddened by defeat, and routed every day. If the Baronet of Queen's Crawley had not had the fear of losing his sister's legacy before his eyes, he never would have permitted his dear girls to lose the educational blessings which their invaluable governess was conferring upon them. The old house at home seemed a desert without her, so useful and pleasant had Rebecca made herself there. Sir Pitt's letters were not copied and corrected, his books not made up, his household business and manifold schemes neglected, now that his little secretary was away, and it was easy to see how necessary such an amanuensis was to him, by the tenor and spelling of the numerous letters which he sent to her, entreating her and commanding her to return. Almost every day brought a frank from the baronet, enclosing the most urgent prayers to Becky for her return, or conveying pathetic statements to Miss Crawley regarding the neglected state of his daughter's education, of which documents Miss Crawley took very little heed. Miss Briggs was not formally dismissed, but her place as companion was a sinecure and a derision, and her company was the fat spaniel in the drawing room, or occasionally the discontented firkin in the housekeeper's closet.
Nor though the old lady would by no means hear of Rebecca's departure, was the latter regularly installed in office in Park Lane. Like many wealthy people, it was Miss Crawley's habit to accept as much service as she could get from her inferiors, and good-naturedly to take leave of them when she no longer found them useful. Gratitude among certain rich folks is scarcely natural or to be thought of. They take needy people's services as their due. Nor have you, O poor parasite and humble hanger-on, much reason to complain. Your friendship for Dives is about as sincere as the return which it usually gets. It is money you love, and not the man, and were Croesus and his footman to change places, you know, you poor rogue, who would have the benefit of your allegiance. And I am not sure that, in spite of Rebecca's simplicity and activity, and gentleness and untiring good humor, the shrewd old London lady, upon whom these treasures of friendship were lavished, had not a lurking suspicion all the while of her affectionate nurse and friend. It must have often crossed Miss Crawley's mind that nobody does anything for nothing. If she measured her own feeling towards the world, she must have been pretty well able to gauge those of the world towards herself, and perhaps she reflected that it is the ordinary lot of people to have no friends if they themselves care for nobody. Well, meanwhile Becky was the greatest comfort and convenience to her, and she gave her a couple of new gowns, and an old necklace and shawl, and showed her friendship by abusing all her intimate acquaintances to her new confidant, than which there can't be a more touching proof of regard, and meditated vaguely some great future benefit to marry her perhaps to Clump, the apothecary, or to settle her in some advantageous way of life, or at any rate, to send her back to Queen's Crawley, when as he had done with her, and the full London season had begun. When Miss Crawley was convalescent, and descended to the drawing-room, Becky sang to her, and otherwise amused her. When she was well enough to drive out, Becky accompanied her. And amongst the drives which they took, whither, of all places in the world, did Miss Crawley's admirable good nature and friendship actually induce her to penetrate, but to Russell Square, Bloomsbury, and the house of John Sedley Esquire. Ere that event, many notes had passed, as may be imagined, between the two dear friends. During the months of Rebecca's stay in Hampshire, the eternal friendship had, must it be owned, suffered considerable diminution, and grown so decrepit and feeble with old age, as to threaten demise altogether. The fact is, both girls had their own real affairs to think of. Rebecca her advance with her employers, Amelia her own absorbing topic. When the two girls met, and flew into each other's arms with that impetuosity which distinguishes the behavior of young ladies towards each other, Rebecca performed her part of the embrace with the most perfect briskness and energy. Poor little Amelia blushed as she kissed her friend, and thought as he had been guilty of something very like coldness towards her. Their first interview was but a very short one. Amelia was just ready to go out for a walk. Miss Crawley was waiting in her carriage below, her people wondering at the locality in which they found themselves, and gazing upon honest Sambo, the black footman of Bloomsbury, as one of the queer natives of the place. But when Amelia came down with her kind smiling looks, Rebecca must introduce her to her friend. Miss Crawley was longing to see her, and was too ill to leave her carriage, when, I say, Amelia came down. The Park Lane shoulder-knot aristocracy wondered more and more that such a thing could come out of Bloomsbury, and Miss Crawley was fairly captivated by the sweet blushing face of the young lady who came forward so timidly and so gracefully to pay her respects to the protector of her friend. "What a complexion, my dear! What a sweet voice!" Miss Crawley said, as they drove away westward after the little interview. "Why, dear Sharp, your young friend is charming. Send for her to Park Lane, do you hear?" Miss Crawley had a good taste. She liked natural manners, a little timidity only set them off. She liked pretty faces near her, as she liked pretty pictures and nice china. She talked of Amelia with rapture half a dozen times that day. She mentioned her to Rod and Crawley, who came dutifully to partake of his aunt's chicken. Of course, on this Rebecca instantly stated that Amelia was engaged to be married to a Lieutenant Osborne, a very old flame. Is he a man in a line regiment? Captain Crawley asked, remembering after an effort, as became a guardsman, the number of the regiment, the TH. Rebecca thought that was the regiment. He captain's name, she said, was Captain Dobbin. A lanky gawky fellow, said Crawley, tumbles over everybody. I know him, and Osborne's a goodish looking fellow, with large black whiskers. Enormous, Miss Rebecca Sharp said, and enormously proud of them, I assure you. Captain Rod and Crawley burst into a hoarse laugh by way of reply, and being pressed by the ladies to explain, did so when the explosion of hilarity was over. He fancies he can play at billiards, said he. I won 200 of him at the Cocoa Tree. He play, the young flat. He'd have played for anything that day, but his friend Captain Dobbin carried him off. Hang him. Rodden, Rodden, don't be so wicked, Miss Crawley remarked, highly pleased. Why, ma'am, of all the young fellows I've seen out of the line, I think this fellow's the greenest. Tarquin and Deuces get what money they like out of him. He'd go to the deuce, to be seen with the Lord. He pays their dinners at Greenwich, and they invite the company. And very pretty company too, I dare say. Quite right, Miss Sharp. Right, as usual, Miss Sharp. Uncommon pretty company, ha, ha. And the captain laughed more and more, thinking he had made a good joke. Rodden, don't be naughty, his aunt exclaimed. Well, his father's a city man immensely rich, they say. Hang those city fellows, they must lead. And I've not done with him yet, I can tell you. Ha, ha. Fie, Captain Crawley, I shall warn Amelia. A gambling husband. Horrid, ain't he, eh? The captain said with great solemnity, and then added, a sudden thought having struck him cold and gad, I say, ma'am, we'll have him here. Is he a presentable sort of a person? The aunt inquired. Presentable? Oh, very well. You wouldn't see any difference, Captain Crawley answered. Oh, let's have him, when you begin to see a few people, and his with Diecolum is an enamorado, eh, Miss Sharp, that's what you call it comes. Gad, I'll write him a note, and have him, and I'll try, if he can play picket as well as billiards. Where does he live, Miss Sharp? Miss Sharp told Crawley the lieutenant's town address, and a few days after this conversation, Lieutenant Osborne received a letter in Captain Rodden's schoolboy hand, and enclosing a note of invitation from Miss Crawley. Rebecca dispatched also an invitation to her darling Amelia, who, you may be sure, was ready enough to accept it when she heard that George was to be of the party. It was arranged that Amelia was to spend the morning with the ladies of Park Lane, where all were very kind to her. Rebecca patronized her with calm superiority. She was so much the cleverer of the two, and her friend so gentle and unassuming, that she always yielded when anybody chose to command, and so took Rebecca's orders with perfect meekness and good humor. Miss Crawley's graciousness was also remarkable. She continued her raptures about little Amelia, talked about her before her face, as if she were a doll, or a servant, or a picture, and admired her with the most benevolent wonder possible. I admire that admiration which the genteel world sometimes extends to the commonalty. There is no more agreeable object in life than to see Mayfair folks condescending. Miss Crawley's prodigious benevolence rather fatigued poor little Amelia, and I am not sure that of the three ladies in Park Lane she did not find honest Miss Briggs the most agreeable. She sympathized with Briggs, as with all neglected or gentle people. She wasn't what you call a woman of spirit. George came to dinner a repast and gherkin with Captain Crawley. The great family coach of the Osbornes transported him to Park Lane from Russell Square, where the young ladies, who were not themselves invited, and professed the greatest indifference at that slight, nevertheless looked at Sir Pitt Crawley's name in the baronetage, and learned everything which that work had to teach about the Crawley family and their pedigree, and the Binkies, their relatives. And C. Rod and Crawley received George Osborne with great frankness and graciousness, praised his play at billiards, asked him when he would have his revenge, was interested about Osborne's regiment, and would have proposed picket to him that very evening, but Miss Crawley absolutely forbade any gambling in her house, so that the young lieutenant's purse was not lightened by his gallant patron, for that day at least. However, they made an engagement for the next, somewhere, to look at a horse that Crawley had to sell, and to try him in the park, and to dine together, and to pass the evening with some jolly fellows. That is, if you're not on duty to that pretty Miss Sedley, Crawley said, with a knowing wink. Monstrous nice girl, 'pon my honor, though, Osborne, he was good enough to add. Odds of tin, I suppose, eh? Osborne wasn't on duty, he would join Crawley with pleasure. And the latter, when they met the next day, praised his new friend's horsemanship as he might with perfect honesty, and introduced him to three or four young men of the first fashion, whose acquaintance immensely elated the simple young officer. How's little Miss Sharp, by the by? Osborne inquired of his friend over their wine, with a dandified air. Gee, good-natured little girl that. Does she suit you well at Queen's Crawley? Miss Sedley liked her a good deal last year. Captain Crawley looked savagely at the lieutenant out of his little blue eyes, and watched him when he went up to resume his acquaintance with the fair governess. Her conduct must have relieved Crawley, if there was any jealousy in the bosom of that lifeguardsman. When the young men went upstairs, and after Osborne's introduction to Miss Crawley, he walked up to Rebecca with a patronizing, easy swagger. He was going to be kind to her and protect her. He would even shake hands with her, as a friend of Amelia's, and saying, "Ah, Miss Sharp, how'd I do?" held out his left hand towards her. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.